Open loops. Do, do. Open loops. Open loops. Open loops. Open loops. You must listen to the open loops, a theme park for absurd beliefs and systems of integration between the mind and the creative spirit. Open loops.
Is there no wrong way to eat a Reese's? Maybe not. But when it comes to Peeps rabbit marshmallows and putting them into the positions you see on the Nature Channel, eating that feels so, so wrong. Your conscious mind can focus on that, while your unconscious mind is now tuned in to your favorite late-night talk show for the shamelessly fringe. It's Open Loops with Greg Bornstein. Conversations that bend. What is going on, loopies, loopars, loopettes? Greg Bornstein here, cultural hypnotist, consciousness disruptor, curator of experience, and chief looper. Welcome to the Halloween special. Thunder sound effects. Ooh, Look, I don't need to pepper this broadcast with anything that resembles any cheap shenanigans. As a matter of fact, you know, there's a siren going off in New York City right now where I am, and that's part of it. It's raw. This ghost stuff can be super raw because at the end of the day, when it's a human talking about the spooky, the ghouls, the demons, the djinns, the evil entities and spirits surrounding us, well, you have to take their word for it. You have to experience it yourself. There are no special effects that can account for my guest's experience. Stephanie Bingham, a returning guest, put out her first interview around Halloween of 2 years ago, 2020, and my gosh, I love interviewing Stephanie. What can I say? You'll hear it on the show. There's something about the way she is channeling her experiences, the way she is speaking, it's speedy, it's quick, it's knowledge bomb after knowledge bomb getting dropped on you about this world of the paranormal, the freaky. I'm not even always that consciously interested in the paranormal. I don't know how much there is. You know, at a certain point, it's, oh, we heard this noise, and the spirit of this person caused this person to float. But, like everything in my life, what I think in my head might be a boring conversation with anybody in the paranormal field ends up being an interesting one, and I suspected that it was probably going to be interesting with Stephanie, even though we talked about so much last time, and it was just as interesting, if not more interesting in this interview. Stephanie is amazing. She's an amazing guest. No wonder she's been on the CW and sci-fi, and people are constantly pitching her TV shows where she's going out and leading seances with teenage girls and whatnot. Yes, there may have been demand for that at one point. You're going to get a whole range of, well, someone's very unique experience, her reality tunnel. You tell me. You tell me if you don't believe her. Is it all made up? She really sounds like she's experiencing this. Look, I don't know. It's spooky. It's kooky. No one except the Addams Family has ever used the word ookie, but it is. And if you like all this kind of weird, creepy, mind-bending, reality, fantastical, psychedelic, defying, just all-around strange fringe content, make sure you follow this podcast on all the podcast platforms. And if you can rate the show and leave a review, go to ratethispodcast.com/openloops. Again, ratethispodcast.com/openloops. Any words about this podcast really helps get this kind of content out there, gets these interesting conversations happening. Again, you're going to love this. I loved recording this. Nothing better than an interview that just feels great as you're learning and experiencing someone else's journey and continued studies in a field that is, despite the popularity, perhaps, of the paranormal, vastly underexplored to its fullest capacity. Very happy, a true experiencer, vampire, the Miss Frizzle of the paranormal is out there. You're about to hear her, Stephanie Bingham. Today on Open Loops, we have a return guest, someone that I thought would be perfect for this Halloween season. Wanted to get a little fringe, wanted to get a little paranormal. Stephanie Bingham, a strange little lady exploring the weirdness around her. She is a scholar, she is a paranormal explorer, she is a researcher, an experiencer, truly an experiencer like none other I've ever spoken with on this show still. Stephanie, thanks so much for coming back.
Thanks for having me.
Yes, look, I mean, there is a lot can happen in 2 years. I remember, you know, we were kind of going through your entire life story. We were talking about how you were, you know, closing portals that were accidentally opened in Ouija boards when you were in college. Yep. and all that. Yep. Kind of stuff. And then at one point we were talking about you were moving towards more into the cryptid category, because we were talking about a creature that is close to my heart from my hometown of Dover, Massachusetts. The Dover Demon. Which,
yep.
You mentioned that you were doing some cryptid work in Kentucky. Tell me this. I mean, 2 years ago, you were on this show. What has been your main focus for the past 2 years?
Everything. That's my problem. I have gotten a lot of writing done in the last 2 years, but I did fall down a sort of rabbit hole in the cryptid world. Because I was looking at all these random sort of big name cryptids all over, and I started finding all of these random reports of like encounters between people and cryptids or people and aliens, and they weren't just normal. They were what they would call an attack. So I sort of got really down the rabbit hole on those right now.
That's
interesting.
So I'm
still trying to claw my way back out.
Okay, so let's get academic here for a second for people that don't really understand. How would you define a cryptid?
A cryptid is an animal that has not been accepted by science. It is either known by folklore or it is known in sort of an anthropological idea by the locals, but not by the scientific establishment. So like an okapi was a cryptid before it was discovered. The lowland gorilla was a cryptid before it was discovered, that sort of thing. And then you've got things like Bigfoot and Loch Ness Monster in the same category that may or may not be real, but you have this sort of lore around them.
Yeah, Yeah, that's interesting. To go off into Loch Ness for a second. I went to Aberdeen this summer, my first time ever in Scotland.
How
And,
was that?
it was great. It was fantastic. We did the tour, but I kept being bummed out by how skeptical all the tour guides seemed. I mean,
Aww.
truly, it seemed like there was. Now I know there is that guy. There's that guy out there who has been there for years. What do you know his name offhand?
I don't know,
I
but I
know
know the
there's
one you're
like,
talking about.
yeah, there's like the guy who's set up there, like perched, staring at Loch Ness for years. And there are diehard fans, but it seemed that, I mean, even that classic photo, the black and white photo, apparently was faked. I mean, out of
Yeah.
curiosity, what is your take on the Loch Ness monster? What have you found in your research?
I really want there to be something behind the Loch Ness Monster. That was sort of my favorite cryptid when I was younger, just something about Nessie, and then it went to Mokili Mbembe. But I just really wanted her to be something. I think that there's a lot of evidence for people seeing something in the loch. I tend to think that it's probably an eel, like an oversized eel or something along those lines, because they do have eels in the loch. But I really don't think we have a plesiosaur, and that kind of makes me sad.
Oh man, coming from you, the
I
person that
know.
has like spirit men standing in her room at all hours of the night, potentially just like spirits just hanging around with you.
Yep.
For you to deny, my gosh, now I want to know the list of things that you don't believe. This is a wild rabbit hole here. Area 51, did a UFO crash? What do you think?
I think something fell. I don't know if it was a UFO or, well, I believe it was a UFO. I don't know if it was an alien UFO or if it was a competing nations, but I do think that something crashed there, yes.
Very interesting. Very interesting. Hey, you know what? I want to give you credit for something too. And I think I mentioned your name. I almost mention your name every single time I tell the story of this. You pointed me in the direction of you said the time traveler with the most credentials, the most credible, is Andrew Bishago of Project Pegasus. You pointed me
Yeah,
in
that's
that
a very interesting
direction.
story. Yeah.
Yeah, and you know what? Since then, I mean, I had him on the show. I've gone down the rabbit hole of time travelers, and I spoke with him several times. I mean, I appreciate that recommendation, and the more I started going into his story and how it related to the other secret projects, Montauk, which I know that you've even done some explorations on or connected to explorations on it.
Yep.
He really is kind of he's still the guy with the most credibility.
Right.
And so do you believe that?
I have a harder time poking holes in his story than I do most people. That's the one that I come back to, and I'm like, I don't know what to make of it. Like, I can't sit there and poke holes in things. So
Yeah.
I believe that he believes it, and sometimes that's enough.
Yeah. Now wait a minute. When you poke holes in things,
Yes.
that's interesting, because I imagine other people are like, yeah, but we try to do that to you all the time, Stephanie. So
Yeah.
who's how are you able to look at some people's stories and be like, that's completely whack, but then people talk about you experiencing fairies and all these creatures and spirits, and they're going, yeah, but who says your story's not fake?
I can't prove my story to anyone. I don't even try to prove my stories to anyone. I know what I've experienced. That's enough for me as far as that goes. And I am quite happy for anyone to believe anything they want to believe if they have had strange experiences, as long as they believe them themselves and they're not actively, you know, the people that are the con artists and then there's the liars that don't realize they're lying.
Yeah.
I feel like there's a very big difference there. And the only people that I would actively try and poke holes into are those that I think are conning people.
Yeah.
But anybody that wants to try and poke holes in my stories, they're more than welcome to. I was there, you weren't.
Interesting. Have you had people over the years? I mean, look, I even imagine in your we always talk about this on the show, but I just think it's such an interesting, instead of going to sorority parties, you were leading seances. I mean, that's kind of a wild
Yep.
experience, but I mean, were there detractors? Were there people that were going, this woman is bringing some dark stuff to this campus. It's probably all a con. And this is how cults get started. I mean, what did you experience?
So when I was in college specifically, I just kind of did my own thing. I didn't really follow that sort of normal thing that the little blonde girl on campus should be doing. So for me, I had people that were scared of what I was doing. That was very common. And then I had people who didn't believe me, but would still come out. And by the end, they, I don't believe in the paranormal, but I don't know what you just did. I got that a lot, where they wouldn't say that they believed me, they wouldn't say they didn't believe me, but they accepted whatever had happened. So I had a lot of people that sort of tried to walk that line and just be like, I don't believe in the paranormal except right over there. And it was always those people that when things started happening, I would get weird messages to, hey, I've got a ghost in my room. There's something going on in the sorority chapter. Come help us out. But the rest of the time, we don't believe in the paranormal. So,
Interesting. Interesting. So are you telling me that, I mean, what's a good example of, and maybe you've told me this story before, but I don't even care because it's always so good. What's a good example of something that someone that might is when someone says, "Hey, I don't believe in the paranormal, but what I just experienced with you in that room was something that I can't explain." Do you have memories of things that have happened around you like that?
One of them that actually happened in college had to do with a sorority. I lived in a dorm that was all girls, and it was mostly sororities with like two floors that weren't. And I was friends with one of the girls in the sorority, and strange things started happening in their dorm or in their floor on the building. And our building backed up to a cemetery, so there was always the occasional thing that would crawl through. It was pretty standard, but it had taken up residence in their chapter room. Which, no outsiders in the chapter room, can't go in the chapter room. But my friend that was upstairs called me up, and the other girls were like, we don't believe in this, but there's something walking down our hallway, and we can hear it, but we can't see anything, and there's something moving things inside the room. And so we essentially did a clearing for them, went through, I showed them how to do it, I showed them the process of doing it. And I remember there was one of the girls who was higher up in the chapter. I'm not entirely sure what she did in the chapter. But she was like, this isn't real, this isn't real, this isn't real. But we literally did the clearing of the room, and she looked at me and she's like, why does the room feel different now? It's like, yeah, that was kind of the point. We're clearing it to remove the thing, and I'm showing you how to do it so I don't have to constantly come up here and do it for you. But just the sort of, I don't believe in this, but why does it feel different? So you don't believe what we're doing, but explain to me what we're doing. It's just like, there is no good answer for those situations.
My gosh. Now, did you, I mean, in terms of learning, clearing and whatnot, was that something that you picked up because you I mean, did you go to it, what happens? I mean, I'm just trying to imagine someone in a similar situation. They grow up, they're seeing all these entities. I mean, remind me, I forget. Did you have like was there were any of your parents involved in the spirit world? Were you connected to a line of spiritual practitioners? I mean, how do you even deal with that? And where do you then get the knowledge to be able to successfully clear yourself?
So my family has an interesting reaction or an interesting history with spirits. It sort of seems to pick a couple of generations and skip some where people are said to see things. So that is sort of accepted in the family. But my family has a very sort of open idea to it. My parents didn't tell me I was seeing ghosts when I started explaining to them what I was seeing. So they never really acknowledged it and they never really hid it from me. So it was a very sort of organic way of growing up, but I was a voracious reader. I had a college entrance reading level in fourth grade, which means I could read anything that was in our elementary school that used to be a high school. And there were books on the paranormal there. There was lots of books on the paranormal there. So I would just check them out and I would read anything I could get my hands on. Everything from, stories of like WPA documents, Works Progress Administration documents on voodoo and interviewing voodoo priestesses and things like that, and how their functioning of their magic works or how their workings work, all the way down to, you know, Wiccan studies and actual historical ghost hunting and just anything I could get my hands on. I was reading and just sort of trying to put a face and a name to whatever it was I was doing. But I had figured out very early on that, and I didn't have words for it at the time, but there was a ghost in my house when I was a very young child who liked to scare me. He'd walk down the hallway and just sort of loom in the doorway. And I figured out very early on that if I sort of pushed against him, but not with my hands, I could make him go away. And I don't really entirely, I can't explain the mechanics of it, but it was one of those things where it was kid logic. It worked. And that's all that mattered. And
yeah,
that was sort of my first interaction with sort of clearing, wasn't clearing at that point, but just sort of warding things out. And just sort of taking that and trying to find ways to explain it and other people that had done this before me and how they interacted with things.
That's very interesting because it almost makes me think of, and I'm curious how you connect to this, the like what was happening with those kids in Montauk and Stranger Things. Do you watch Stranger Things?
Oh, yeah. Mm-hmm. Yep.
Okay. What do you think of an 11 type? I mean, first of all, there are people out there. The name Penny Shepherd comes to mind who claims that she is 11, was part of the Montauk Project. I mean, I've met several people who also, I mean, obviously it's kind of a cool thing to claim that you're Millie Bobby Brown. But I mean, this does sound similar in the sense that having these innate abilities, I mean, not everybody can put up their hand and make a ghost go away.
Yeah. I mean,
do you relate to this at all? Is this some kind of predisposition that you had to be able to have these abilities? What's your take on that?
I think that I relate very well to 11, just in general. She is the character on the show that I relate to the most. But I think that we oftentimes take away the ingenuity of a child, especially a child that has no other options at the moment. You are going to do anything and everything you can think of to try and fix whatever situation you're in. And I don't think you can underestimate what a child can figure out, or at least that's what it was in my case. I do think a lot of people are predisposed to this. And especially if you don't stop seeing spirits at a certain point, I think you just have to deal with it. So you have to learn how to function in sort of modern society while, by unmodern methods.
Yeah. I mean, did you, were there incidents of you freaking out people with abilities as kid? Oh, yeah. Mm-hmm. Give me one of those.
Oh, yeah. So I didn't realize I was seeing dead people till I was in fourth grade. Like, I had absolutely no idea. I had told my parents about what I was seeing, just different ghostly encounters. They knew I was seeing dead people, but they didn't tell me that. And there were two little kids in our neighborhood that I used to play with all the time, little girl and her younger brother. Still remember these kids. And I remember there was one day we were out playing in the summer, like me and the other kids in the neighborhood. And I was like, we should invite the little kids. And they're like, who are you talking about? And I'm trying to explain to them who these children are and just sort of watching them realize that they did not know who I was talking about. That was one of the first times that I sort of realized that I was dealing with something that they weren't used to or something that they weren't experiencing.
Yeah.
And just watching that sort of thread of fear creep in was something.
Oh my gosh. At what point are you content with not being normal?
I have never been normal. I would not know how to begin to be normal at this point. So yes, I'm quite happy not being normal.
You're happy. Well, that's pretty good. That's pretty good. Yeah. I mean, it's very, I mean, I even with this show, Stephanie, I found over the years that talking about these things, it definitely weirds people out. As much as I thought, you know, UFOs were kind of in now and being more open to the spiritual realm, there certainly seems to be this, you're one of those people. You kind of, I mean, were you bullied for this at all growing up? I mean, how did you survive ultimately?
I lived in a very, very small town, very religious town in Kentucky. They used to call me the spawn of Satan, that I'd sold my soul to the devil, because the kids that I went to elementary school with were the same kids I was going to high school with. It was sort of a known factor that I was the weird girl, but I fell in with a group very early of theater kids, of all things.
Oh, that
And then I was
explains
a ballerina for a long time.
it.
Exactly. You know, you've got your weirdos already, so you're good. If they want to say stupid things over there, let them. And we just go off and do our weird things over here in the corner. But yeah, it was literally just having those other cliques that I was able to run around with and just basically ignore the other kids.
That's very interesting. Tell me this. What happens when you say Macbeth in a theater?
I generally try and avoid that, but things have happened. It's not the Macbeth, it's when you're doing the witches and they're casting the spell. That's when things get interesting in a theater.
Really? What happened? Give me that story. My
That actually
gosh.
didn't happen to me. That happened to one of my friends. They were doing that on a live stage outdoors, and they started the incantation for the witch's spell in Macbeth, and the wind rose up and it got a little, like, it was a little too perfectly timed. And it's one of those things where when it happens, you're like, yeah, I'm going to pretend like that was totally planned and not odd at all. And you just keep right on going.
Oh my gosh. Now that's a whole nother topic. I mean, the history
Is.
of haunted incidents during theatrical productions. I mean,
Yes.
now I imagine most people would say, oh, well, that's an effect. But do you have more as the historian you are? Now I want to go down this theater rabbit hole, and maybe we'll get to cryptids at some point. But yes, I'm following the journey here. Like, wait, give me some more
Absolutely.
haunted incidents.
Well, theaters in and of themselves are places of such great energy. You end up with a lot of hauntings. And sort of the ones that people always hear about is, at least from the actor's perspective, when you're doing rehearsals and you see someone in the audience, when you know it's a closed auditorium and you know no one's out there. I always like that sort of haunting. And I've been in a lot of theaters that have that sort of haunting, where if you are doing your thing on stage, dancing, whatever it happens to be, and you look out, you will see a single person sitting in a specific seat in that theater. And I've always found those to be sort of warm, fuzzy entities. You know, they're just coming back to see what's happening. But you have that sort, you have the ones that are backstage, and I don't know of any theater I've ever been at that did not have their own theater ghost. They're just very, I don't want to say popular, but they seem to be ubiquitous among theaters. And
Yeah.
those run the gamut of the ones that are hanging out backstage, the ones you're going to see in the mirrors as you're walking past, the one that might move your props to a different table when you absolutely have to have that prop.
Yes.
You know, all those important things, you know.
Is the
But
Phantom of the Opera real?
go ahead.
The Phantom of the Opera, is that real?
Yes.
Based on
Is it
something?
real? Based on a book, to the best of my knowledge. I don't know that that is based on an actual historical event. I mean, the places definitely are real. Some of the things inside it are real,
Yeah.
but the creepy man living in the basement who has been murdering people, I think may have just been a story, a very good one, but a story.
Yes. Very interesting. Very interesting. Yeah, okay. So definitely a whirlwind. And for those of you listening, I mean, this is just like this is why Stephanie Bingham is such an interesting guest, because you never know where it's gonna go. There's so many
Really
different
don't.
things. And I'm sure in your day-to-day you never know where things are gonna go. I mean, what's that like to wake up and see a spirit that maybe let me ask you this, actually. Does that happen to you? Do you encounter stuff still that you're going, okay, goblin, vampire, ghoul, Mothman, jinn, no, none of the, like, you don't know what it is?
All the time. Not all the time at this point, but with the last few weeks having been a little more active for me than usual, just with what I'm up to right now, there's been a lot of really, really strange things, especially on property, where I work, and just trying to discern exactly what it is you're looking at, because I know what has been in there in the past, and you know, you sort of have that idea of nature spirits, things that have been here for a long time. And then you're looking and you're like, well, what is that? But I was on a ghost hunt last night, and there were things in the backyard of this particular location, and this place is known for a specific inhuman entity. I was really hoping to see that entity. It wasn't there. But when we got there, there were these things in the backyard, and I was trying to explain what it was I was seeing. And I realized at that point that I did not know the specific, like, what you would call these things. They weren't quite people. They weren't quite not people. Like, they were inhuman, but they were vaguely people-shaped. But they were, it was sort of crawling, and it was very odd. And just, it was one of those situations where it's like, I knew I did not have the words to explain what these things are in a way that I could relate this to someone. Like, I can't look at it and say, that is a fairy, or that is a puckwudgie, or that is a djinn. I can't look at these things and say that. So it's just like, well, it's a thing.
Have you ever discovered any new things and classified things differently? I mean, I feel like you should get credit for some of these things that no one's ever seen except you.
Well, I've never actually thought about classifying them. I try and describe them for myself, and I try and describe them for anyone that would be encountering that haunting, either anyone that would be living there, working there, that sort of thing. But outside of that, I don't really see the need to sort of, on a larger scale, classify them. But and part of it is a matter that a lot of these entities are sentient, and they have their own ideas and their own feelings about things, not necessarily words, because a lot of inhumans don't speak like we think about speaking. But there's this odd sort of idea of, you know, I don't want to name something that already has a name to itself, if that makes any sense.
No. It sounds very respectful of you, actually. You know,
especially when I don't know what they are.
Yes. That's very kind. But I do wonder about, you know, okay. Your experience is so interesting because I also wonder about your work in the larger scope of what people think of as danger. I mean, people talk about this all the time. Well, you don't want to be one of those people that's spending too much time around these dark spirits, these entities, because you could get lost. It could swallow you up. It could, you just never know what they could do. What is that for you at this point? Do you fear anything? Do you fear losing complete control? I mean, how are you so just willing to go head first, like Steve Irwin or something, into the spirits? I mean, how do you do that?
Great analogy there. Basically, I've been doing this for so long that I'm very comfortable with a large variety and a large, you know, swath of types of spirits. So they don't really freak me out, and I'm very at home dealing with them. But I do have very firm boundaries, things that I don't cross, things that I know in the past have given me trouble. So I will avoid things like devil's boxes that have the mirrored rooms on all sides. I know I do not function well in there. So I will avoid situations like that. But just dealing with spirits, I've done it for so long at this point that it just is my reality.
Yeah. Very interesting. Would people feel protected by you? I mean, is there a business here? Could we do Stephanie Bingham haunted house weekends where you stay with everybody just in case something weird goes on, but for people that are curious?
Well, I mean, that is a reason I get invited to a lot of ghost hunts and a lot of paranormal investigations, because if there is something truly crazy going on, generally I'm not the one running out the door.
Yes.
Last night on the ghost hunt, they needed to go up to the attic for something, and they didn't want to go in the house alone. I'll go with you. I don't care. Let's go. You know.
There's
nothing overly malevolent inside this house, so let's go. You know. But just that's generally my role at a ghost hunt, is sort of, if I'm not actively acting as the historian, I'm generally the one that's walking around with people that want to go exploring the house but don't want to go by themselves.
Yeah.
You know.
That makes sense. Tell me this. Attics,
yes.
Creepy places, overrated mm-hmm. as a creepy phenomenon, or are people on point?
I think most of them are. I do think that they add to the aesthetic. So there are certain haunted locations, especially famous haunted locations, where the attic or the basement or the cellar is going to have more activity because more people are there and there's more energy in that area. So there's more reason for the ghost to be there. But in general, you are in a confined, creepy space that's generally not well lit and generally not very clean. So you're going to have things out of the corner of your eye moving, dust, dirt. You're going to have cobwebs touching you. And I think that just sort of heightens that experience for people. But in general, you're as likely to see a ghost in the first floor of a house as you are in the basement.
Wow. 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 Yeah. Okay. Who would win in a creepy fight? Basements or attics?
For me, it is going to definitely be attics. I've been in one too many attics where you can't step other than on the little beams that go across because there's no actual floor. And yeah. That weirds me out.
That's a good point. Andrew Lloyd Webber should do the third one in Phantom of the Opera, but the attic phantom. Yes. Actually, don't have it be Andrew Lloyd Webber because, well, you're a theater person. We could all do better. But okay, so my question is about this. It's about actually, do I even have a question? I'm not sure. You know what? Let me tell you this. I'm like, I feel that, I mean, I know I've called you Miss Frizzle of the paranormal before, mm-hmm. and I still hold to that metaphor. I mean, why aren't you like a, you know what would be fun? You should be a substitute teacher at a high school, a local high school, and just go into this. Go off the curriculum. Start talking about this paranormal stuff. I mean, I would have loved that in high school. Have you ever? Okay.
That would be excellent.
That would be pretty great. I mean, I would love to see you in the bunch. I mean, don't you feel like, I feel like you could have a Taylor Swift style squad of teenage girls that are into this paranormal stuff, and they would just they would go off with you. I mean, what do you think?
Sure, I've been pitched this show before.
Really?
Yeah.
What? Okay. Well.
Yeah.
What do you? Wait, where are you? How are you pitched? Tell me about that.
Oh, the occasional. Every so often, I'll get somebody from a production company or a network show up, or reach out to me with an idea for a show. But this sort of idea of collecting a group of younger girls or college age girls who are getting into the paranormal was a few years back a very sort of popular idea.
Yes.
That I do remember floating around and being pitched a couple of times.
Why was it? Scream Queens? That show? That terrible kind of American Horror Story knockoff. I mean, there was a bit of this for a while. Also, that Sabrina show where they actually did a ritual. Isn't that right? They did like a real kind of dark occult ritual on that Netflix series.
I heard that, but I never saw any sort of like, I never saw the confirmation of it, but I did hear that rumor floating around. And with how that show was done, it wouldn't totally surprise me if that had happened, but you know how gossip gets.
Yeah. I mean, I don't know if you've ever delved into this stuff, but do you think that there is kind of a dark arts, occult undercurrent in pop culture, the people in, but I know this gets kind of into the conspiratorial realm, but I also know you hang around those people at these conferences. I mean, do you think there is kind of some sinister energy going on in contemporary entertainment at all?
My whole thing with most conspiracy theories is that if there's more than two people involved, that means that somebody has to keep their mouth shut. And I feel like if that was actively happening at the level that people think it's happening at, that there would be so much evidence of it and so many people talking about it from the inside. And I haven't seen that sort of overwhelming evidence of it. Are there people involved in entertainment that are involved in the occult? Sure, absolutely, cool. Are people on the outside who are not involved in the occult freaked out by what they're seeing? Probably. I don't think it goes to the extent that some theories would have it go.
Yeah, that's interesting. Interesting. They call you, when you go to these conferences, they call you a paranormal guest. Mm-hmm. Are you yourself paranormal, or is everything around you paranormal, or is there a difference?
Well, in my experience, I am my bar for normal. So my bar for normal just isn't right at this point, I'm quite sure. But I do think that the world that I inhabit is paranormal at this point. I can't really deny the fact that my experience is what everyone else is experiencing. Like, it's not. And I understand that. So, yeah, my life is pretty paranormal at this point. So it's a dead-on name.
Would it be boring for you? I mean, let me throw this hypothetical at you. You wake up one day and all of a sudden, boom, the spirit stopped. What would that be like for you?
That is my worst nightmare.
Really?
I think at that point, the problem for me would be that I would know that they were still there, but I couldn't see them. I couldn't communicate with them. I couldn't interact with them. It would be like waking up and being blind. I wouldn't know how to cope.
Yeah. I mean, I'm coming from this from someone that truly has not, at least I don't believe I've seen a ghost or a spirit, but I am always going, you know, and I keep hearing this over and over that people keep saying the veil is thinning. They've been saying it for years. I mean, they said it in the 70s. They've said it throughout time. But I guess my question for you is this. I mean, is there, first of all, are there conscious practices that one can do to see these things? A. B. If we do these conscious practices, do we even want to experience what you're experiencing ever? And then C. Is it just going to happen anyways because of this veil-thinning ideology that seems to permeate itself through the spiritual community? I guess you got three questions there. Curious your take.
Let's see if we can get through this. All right. So are there methods to become more aware of the things and the energies around you? I think so. I think meditation is a good way of getting there, just to feel like, figure out, you know, what thoughts are yours, what you feel like as a person. And what you feel like internally helps people sort of navigate what the energies around them feel like. So I've always found, especially people who are having experiences but don't know how to deal with them yet, I've always found that meditation helps them sort of calm and center and be able to sort of sort out what is them and what is external. But that is for people who have any sort of abilities, be that empathy or psychic abilities or anything of the sort. Do I think if you were to practice, say, meditation, you would be able to see dead people 100% of the time? Absolutely not. I think that that is very much like singing. Everyone can get sort of close to singing, but only a few people can actually sing really, really well. You know what I mean?
Right.
I do think that most people would be aware of an entity if they were looking for the signs. That feeling of being watched, the energy changing in a room when there's something else in the room with you. But I don't necessarily think that everyone would be able to see them per se. Maybe able to hear them, smell them, all the other senses. And the third question, the veil thinning. I've heard the veil thinning thing a lot too. People talking about it getting lighter and getting lighter and not thickening back. And to an extent, I think that they're not entirely wrong. But I don't think that the veil between the worlds is about to sort of fall and everyone's going to be able to see dead people. I really don't think that's in our future anytime soon.
Now, why are you so confident in that?
Because I feel like if something that catastrophic were about to happen, there would be other signs of it. Also, it's been happening my entire life that people have been saying that the veil is getting thinner, the veil is getting thinner, the veil is getting thinner. And it still hasn't happened.
Yes.
So at what point, like, is this not just the way that it feels to everyone all the time? You know what I mean?
Right. Right. I'm confused by it because I've spoken to so many people of different belief systems and especially curious about people that trust the elders in Australia. I've spoken to people in Australia that are very much into the elder tribes and the Hopi and talking about this notion of you know, the Earth's resonance, right? The Schumann resonance and stuff like this that implies kind of a global shift in consciousness. But I'm going, yeah, but What's the difference actually going to be? I suppose, I guess my question for you is also related to this now. I've also heard that, you know, at a certain point, when people ascend the levels of consciousness, now, whatever that means. I mean, I also think a lot of this stuff is metaphorical, but I've heard enough people talk about how the spiritual realm is kind of a midway point between waking reality and ultimately aligning with one source, one truth, this God, whatever it is, source, higher consciousness, whatnot. I mean, I don't know if you have those spiritual beliefs. I'm not sure. I've never really delved into your personal religious beliefs, but I am curious. I mean, do you think in a realm where people talk about these forces of evil, good versus evil, and that, you know, behind the veil, behind that veil, there's, it's even simpler than the manifestation of a demon or a djinn or a vampire. It's just kind of energies. Do you believe there is something there? Or at this point in your life, are you just like, hey, this is where I am. This is where I'm going to stay. I don't have any aspirations to be one with source. And I like my creatures. What is your take on that?
I personally do not ascribe to the idea that the souls are trying to advance. I think that that is sort of belittling the souls themselves. Are you here to learn something? Sure, absolutely. Are you actively trying to escape or to advance? That is not how I picture it. And the idea of things being so black and so white in any of the spiritual realms is very hard for me, because I sort of live with the idea that everything is a shade of gray and there is no true, true good and no true, true evil, or at least very little true good and very little true evil. So that is a very, very hard concept for me that I've heard over and over again from a lot of people and a lot of people that I trust and respect. It is just not how I personally experience or think about or contextualize what I encounter on a daily basis.
Yeah. I mean, I suppose it is, I mean, I don't know. Is it, I don't want to say you're stuck there, but, and I don't even know if it's stuck. I mean, do you like having all these varieties is there too much variety? Do you wish there was more variety? Are you ever just like, okay, you know what? Can it just be vampires this week? Can it just be vampires? You know, what is your take on that?
There are times when it would be really nice to be able to sit and focus on a single sort of entity or a single sort of phenomena that might be happening at the time. But in my experience, that doesn't happen. And it's sort of a reminder to me not to hyper-focus and to just be aware and be present and be willing and able to interact with whatever may happen. And it's a good reminder to sort of, you know, calm down and just go with the flow, because things are going to happen and you're just going to have to deal with it.
Yeah. I also just, in terms of your mind, I'm not sure how it feels like. I don't know. Do you even get stressed out? Is it just because, I mean, you clearly had this as a kid, the ability to absorb a lot of information. So I imagine if you see a lineup of ghouls, goblins, demons, you know, you could quickly be like, okay, you gotta do that for this guy, you gotta, okay, this is how you, okay, put lipstick on this one, you gotta do, like, exactly. You know, I mean, yes. is that 100%. What it is?
To an extent, the ghosts don't stress me out. And if there ever is a question of, I think I've read about this thing or this entity or this sort of phenomena happening this one time, I generally have a pretty good recall for books and titles and things of that nature. And I'm not at all afraid to go back and dig up whatever text that I was looking at that point in time to try and recreate or jog my memory of what it was I was reading. And you also have to take into effect that if you are out doing something and you have an entity that you think should work this way, and exactly what the book says doesn't work, you're going to try something else. And you just sort of, it becomes a trial and error experiment at that point to see exactly how right or how wrong that author may have been at that time.
Interesting. Interesting. Have you participated in a formal seance?
Yeah.
I mean, I know
I've
you did these.
A bunch of them.
You did these Ouija board thing. I mean, felt like you were doing a lot of shutting down because people were playing with the Ouija board when you were in college, but you've run a bunch of seances. What is, when you're doing that, I mean, is it people coming to you that actually wanting to contact lost ones? Is it just you trying to explore the spirits that are around? I mean, what is it like usually?
Depends on the group. I a lot of times will run one near or on Halloween as sort of a festive activity. But a lot of the times it is to run experiments to see what we can contact, or just a different way during a paranormal investigation to contact the other side and try and give people who may not be psychic in the way that I am the opportunity to interact with and feel what it is a ghost feels like on some level.
Do you always have success at these seances? Do people always walk away going, okay, something weird was there?
Of course not. I mean, you can't have 100% success on things like that because you're always going to have that one person every so often that just no matter what you do is going to say, no, that didn't happen. But you can't focus on those. You have to focus on the people that are there and willing and ready to see what is happening. And if nothing happens during a seance, then we're going to move on to an Estes, or we're going to move on to a Geinsfeld, or we're going to, you know, whatever happens next.
Now, wait a minute. What's an Estes?
Estes session? It's a way of working with a ghost box where you have a receiver who has essentially like headphones on that you can't hear through. So like the protective ones. And they have a mask on, and being fed into those headphones is the ghost box. And there's someone either in the next room or far enough away that we're certain that the person's receiving can't hear. So when they are asking questions, you then see what the receiver is hearing out of the ghost box. It's essentially a way to put someone in a light form of a trance and allow them to, you know, get out of their own way and just spit out the information that's there.
Do you go into trance easily?
Yes.
Oh. Yeah. Have you ever had like a formal hypnosis session?
I have not. And I just saw one of my friends get hypnotized over the last week, and it was wild.
Why is that wild to you? Of all the things in the world that you've experienced, why was that the one that blew your mind?
Because it was so different. It was so unique. And just seeing other people go through the process of hypnosis and how it sort of works for them just sort of shows you how it might work on yourself. And just sort of chewing on that idea was kind of strange for me.
Yeah, I'm almost wondering what you in trance would encounter that you don't encounter regularly.
Yes, that is the question. And that is the part that makes me go, maybe this isn't a good idea. Or maybe it's the best idea I've ever had, and I can't really decide which it is.
What would open that up? What would be scarier, a hypnosis session or you trying LSD? I'm not sure.
Yeah, that's a toss-up at that point. I'm guessing the LSD, but I have no idea. So, yeah, that either one would be real weird.
Fascinating, fascinating. Okay, so you're leading these seances. Now, look, you know, let's talk about kind of the things that happened there, because obviously Houdini, great skeptic of all sorts, tried to contact his mother, you know, even had the code word, kept disproving all the psychics, the Fox sister, all this stuff. I mean, what is the difference between a seance that you've run or the ones that really something's going through versus maybe the ones that were done and maybe still are done by con artists?
So the spiritualist seances were almost always meant to produce physical evidence of entities. So you had the ectoplasm, which was very popular at the time.
Yes.
You had the moving objects on tables that were very popular at the time. And you had all of these psychics that Houdini debunked, but you also had a few that he never did. And it, you know, it gets into this weird area there. Was he a skeptic? Absolutely. But he was a seeker. He was trying to contact the other side. That was his goal.
Yes.
And I think he would have very much liked that. But I don't do a lot of the physical mediumship, as in I don't do any of it. So when I'm running a seance, you might have a candle on the table and we are looking for the flame of the candle to respond by bouncing up and down. That sort of thing is about as physical a manifestation as I am personally going to go for in a seance that I am running. I am going much more for the sort of almost table tipping sort of side, where you're going to have the group around the table and we are going to look for people being touched, people hearing things, people feeling things. The occasional walk-in, that sort of thing. So a much more esoteric version of a seance, but the same basic mechanics.
Interesting. Interesting. Yeah. When you say the candle Well, actually, yeah, I want to know how you define these terms. So, the candle flame bouncing, I mean, do you actually mean it just moving, or does it actually lift up from the candle and levitate? I know that's like a Hollywood effect, though I
Yeah,
do
that's a Hollywood
wonder.
effect. No, I've seen multiple times where you'll have a candle go from just a teeny tiny flame barely above the wick to a flame that might be 3 inches long, and then it'll come back down. And there are times where you can ask questions and it will seem to respond, almost in the way that a REM pod will, where it'll go off if you say, "Is this the right answer?" and make it light up, and it reacts sort of in the same sort of way, but on a much lower tech level. And some of that absolutely can be air on the flame and things of that nature. But I do find it odd when that sort of thing starts happening when you have seemingly intelligent answers being given by it. It's the same idea with what the Fox sisters were purporting to do with the knocks. You know, if you're here, knock once. If this is a yes, knock twice, that sort of thing. And knocks, raps, sounds in the walls, those are interesting, but they're extraordinarily hard to prove, but they're also extraordinarily hard to rule out that it's the house settling, you know? So that's why I prefer to do things with as little sort of external ephemera as possible, just to let people have that experience for themselves.
And how would you define table tipping?
Table tipping was a practice that was done in the turn of the century, really up to the Victorian era. And it was literally the practice of essentially allowing entities, or so the sort of the th thought goes, to move the table. Like, that is how you would get answers to things. And you get sort of stories out of that same time period about tables levitating and that sort of thing. But a table tipping seance was generally done sort of very close together in very close quarters. And that is more the effect that I generally go for if I'm running a seance. I like it to be a very small, very tightly packed group, as opposed to, sitting around a big dinner table with five of your best friends.
What is your take on the Magic 8-Ball? Is there
I
anything there?
actually don't know. I've gotten some that seem to be very on the nose and some that don't seem to be on the nose, so I don't know.
That's interesting. Yeah, I know. I've always wondered about those things. Yeah, what I find so fascinating is these I mean when people go all the way in their accounts of things. I mean, I know there were some of the great photos of the old days of the tables floating in the air and hitting the walls and even I mean stories about shamans and jumping from, one second they're in this location and all of a sudden they disappeared and then they're in a completely impossible location. I mean, I'm curious with, have you ever seen any of these magical phenomena from people that at least manifest in this form as humans before? Do you believe in those stories? Floating things, people doing unbelievable skills. How physical does it get?
So that's one of the things that I've always sort of struggled with, is that I would love to see something levitate. I would absolutely love it, but I've never seen it. I have been in locations where I know I'm the only person there, no animals, no nothing, and I'll leave an item exactly on a table and I'll come back in a little while later and it'll have been moved to a different location in the room. That I know has happened because I've seen it. But as far as the physicality of being able to apport or being able to levitate something like that, I don't put it completely out of the realm of possibility, but it is not something that I have ever personally encountered, although I would really like to.
Wow. Okay. You've heard it out there, folks. If you could show her a levitation. Actually, do you like
On board.
magicians? Do you like magicians? Mentalists?
To some
Anything like that?
extent, yeah.
Oh, nice. Well, hey. Okay. But she doesn't want a magician. we need to find a real levitation. I'd be curious. Bring Stephanie Bingham on site. I want to know about that story. And I also want to know about these cryptids. Because I mean, there is kind of this Well, especially with Bigfoot, there's a lot of interdimensional narratives about him. Maybe this is a translucent figure. I mean, in your experience, I imagine cryptids all kind of have different dimensions of aspects and backgrounds. But are there certain trends, like, for instance, I don't know. Is the Dover demon, would you say they're actually physical and not of the spiritual realm? You know, which cryptids are, which cryptids aren't? How do you sort them? Because to me, a cryptid could just be an animal we haven't discovered yet. Exactly. How do you classify it?
There are certain cryptids that I think are physical flesh and blood animals. At least some of them are. Yeti, I think, is a good example of that. I do believe that is probably an undiscovered, I think probably bear, but possibly an ape. I think there's enough physical evidence for it from an anthropological standpoint to be like, yeah, there's something roaming around in those mountains. But then you get into something like a Mothman or a Dover demon, and I'm like, well, I've been to Point Pleasant. The town is really, really odd. It's got some really odd history. We have lots of provenance of things happening there. Do I think that there was a 7-foot-tall physical entity running around? I personally don't. But that doesn't mean that I don't think people weren't seeing something. Because I do think that they were seeing something. And I think they were seeing something with the Dover demon. That is one of the ones where I come in, I'm like, was this a very strange animal that had some sort of deformity running around for a little bit? Or was it something possibly interdimensional? Was it an alien sort of entity? I end up with sort of those three categories of, I think it's a physical animal. I think it is probably something that is purely an entity of some kind that's able to manifest. And the ones that I think could be misclassified animals or possibly something just truly other.
Yes, right. It gets weird in a way. It feels like cryptid is such a simplification at times.
Yeah, it absolutely is. People want cryptid to mean, you know, the animals that we can go out in the woods, we can track it down, and we can actually find one and bring it in. And I think that might be a little narrow of an explanation because there are so many things out there that have the same sort of bones as a cryptid does that look to be animals or animalistic, but also seem to have this truly paranormal element to them that you're not quite sure how to deal with otherwise.
Fascinating. You know, speaking of cryptids and something related to what we were talking about earlier, as of recent, I heard Andrew Bishago, time traveler, chrononaut, mm-hmm. on a radio show talking about what he believes is going on with Bigfoot. In general, he's just like one of these guys that's a very smart man and knows a lot about a lot of things, it seems, whether his story is even true or not. I mean, this guy's a mm-hmm. lawyer and was a professor and whatnot. But he was talking a lot about what he thinks because he says he's had encounters with these things. And he was saying that he believes Bigfoot might be an interdimensional being and mm-hmm. it might account for a lot of the missing person's stories. What is your thoughts on that?
So when you get into things like the missing 411, I would not immediately jump to Bigfoot. The interdimensional aspect of it would explain how you have a Bigfoot in one location 1 minute and gone the next. Absolutely, you can make that argument. The missing 411 stuff gets so wrapped up in all of the different options for what could be happening.
Yes.
Because clearly some of it is people just getting lost in the woods, people that want to disappear into the woods, things like that. But then there are others that I think, and I know it sounds insane, but sort of that idea of the fairy abduction from Celtic mythology. You know, they will take away the children, they will take away certain people and bring them into their underground. Specifically when you start dealing with the children who sort of fall into those missing 411 patterns, but are found later and have these absolutely crazy stories, like the one child that, what was it, a wolf or a bear, he said, had taken care of him and ate the hat off of his head, but fed him berries.
Wow,
Just,
what? When was that?
I don't know. It was one of the ones that I'd read in one of the Missing 411 books, but it was
Yeah.
this little boy. He was maybe 4 or 5, something like that, and had been missing. And they found him, and he tells the story of this wolf or bear or something of the kind that took care of him, but ate the hat off his head and was feeding him berries out of his hand or paw. And the child showed up miles away from where he should have been. So something or someone had to be interacting with this child to get them to that location. But things like that remind me of the old stories of the fairy abductions. And I kind of wonder if we're not seeing some level of the same activity or some like North American equivalent thereof.
What were the fairy abductions? I gotta know more about that.
So in Celtic times, the idea of the changeling, like, say your child was healthy one day, sick the next, you might think you had a changeling. And in that case, what would have happened would have been a fairy would have come out of their mound, out of the ground where they lived, and would have taken your child and replaced it with one that looked the same but was sickly, a fairy baby. And there's also stories that go back of adults that were taken by fairies of different sorts into the underground. And they always come back with these strange tales of strange creatures in the underground that they met in the fairylands. But those are the ones that you sort of hear with the idea that when they come back, they may not have aged. It may have been, you know, 10 minutes for them, but 2 years here. And that sort of time differential is very common there. And you also have the idea if you eat fairy food, you're stuck in fairyland. There's lots of rules for that. And I think that comes with the time and the folklore that it is growing out of. But there's so many instances of people disappearing and then reappearing that I find it very strange.
Fascinating. Have you ever been to another dimension?
Not that I'm aware of.
Interesting. Interesting. So they come from other dimensions to you more so.
Well, they come from somewhere, absolutely. I don't really try and poke at where they come from because, frankly, the fact that they're here is more than enough.
Yeah. What of the creatures, of the spirits, of the entities, who's the most annoying?
The most annoying entities for me are the ones that are that see me when I'm out and about, that realize that I can see them. I've gotten very good at ignoring things over the years, but the
yeah.
ones that realize I can see them and then are suddenly just begging for attention or for me to talk to them or just following me when I am trying to be a normal person and go to the grocery store and get whatever it is I need to get and go home. Those for me are always the most annoying.
Now, wait a minute. Is this the dating thing again? I mean, uh-huh. Do these guys show up on first dates?
They'll show up anywhere.
Yeah, I remember you. We were discussing this quite in depth last time. You were saying, yeah,
yep.
It's frustrating when meeting mm-hmm. others mm-hmm. in any social context, but particularly if you're trying to go out and meet a significant other when there's a spirit just hanging out.
Yep. There are reasons that I am single, and that is a large one.
It's what? Wait a minute. Okay. Now, so over 2 years,
mm-hmm.
I mean, it's been 2 years since we talked initially. I imagine mm-hmm. you must have gone out on some dates since then.
Sure.
Has anybody listened to one of your numerous appearances and been like, you know what? I don't care. I know who she is. I know what this woman is all about. I'm gonna live with her in the spirits. It's gonna be some sort of polyamorous, except without any of us loving these things, relationship.
Nope.
Why not date the guests of like Paranormal Con? I mean, these guys must understand you more.
To an extent, but I find that especially at paranormal conventions, the way I interpret things and the way other people interpret things are very different, which makes for great guests, makes for great debates, great panels. Not always the best for, you know, besties.
I was gonna say, are the dudes weird? I've been like, huh, I wonder if I could meet my wife at a paranormal convention.
Paranormal conventions are a little strange. They are definitely a little
Oh
strange.
my gosh, I've already seen the weirdos at magic conventions from growing up and going to those. I met magicians. I can't even imagine what kind of people show up at these things. But yeah, okay. Interesting. Very interesting. Oh gosh. I mean, that's tough. And even with friends, it might be tough making new friends too.
Absolutely.
I mean, look, I've always sort of thought that, well, maybe it's what I think about Kentucky. I don't know. Is Kentucky holding you back from your full social potential?
Well, it's Kentucky, of course.
Why are you still in Kentucky? You got to get out of there, I think.
Well, that's a thought. That's absolutely a thought. Kentucky is a unique place that has a very different sort of feel and a very different sort of manners than you find in any of the states around it. And it was where I was raised, so it's the sort of culture that I know best, but it's still a place that is very sort of closed-minded in many ways and very insular.
That's interesting. I mean, do you think that these spirits hover around Kentucky more than other locations for some reason?
When I've lived in other states, they've been just as haunted as Kentucky. Sometimes the entities vary from location to location, but I generally place that more as a this was native to this area and this is native to somewhere else, that sort of thing, as opposed to one state is more conducive to entities than the other.
Fascinating. What about extraterrestrial life? You ever see that?
No, they terrify me.
Really? What?
Yeah, that's.
You're afraid of ETs?
Yes, absolutely.
Why is that?
Because I've never met one.
Oh, is that the qualification for fear? If you
For
never meet
me, it
one?
is, yes, very much so.
Very interesting. Very interesting. Okay, so I mean, does that extend to other creatures too? If you haven't met it yet, you're afraid of it.
I think those are an exception to most because of the way that modern media portrays how entities or aliens interact with people. You know, the ones that'll just creep into your house at night, that sort of thing.
Yeah.
I mean, I'm not saying that if I met a dog man, I wouldn't be terrified of it, but I feel like that's a different sort of terror than an alien.
But you know what? I know you've been to these. If you've been around a paranormal convention, you've certainly talked to somebody that claims that they are the term is conscious walk-in or a
Yep.
star seed, which
Yep.
and often it's very benevolent. It's very loving. It's very, I mean, and maybe you're creeped out by these people because I'm a little creeped out by them too sometimes. But you know, the source people, the one consciousness, what we were talking about before that you reject. But you know, despite the fact that those people might have kind of a creepy energy at times, they often are. To me, it makes a case that, oh, they love us up there. Maybe you just don't buy it, though. I mean, do you have anybody that you've met? Has anybody that you've met in your past that claims they are part alien or part ET, rather? You're not supposed to use the A word. Has anybody ever made you go, you know what? Yeah, I'd like to be visited by an Arcturian or a Pleiadian.
The people that I've met who believe themselves to have other souls or to be walk-ins, things of that nature, most of them have been very kind, very sweet, and I'm fine with those. But the idea that one could possibly show up in its natural form still freaks me out.
Is it the look? Is it the weird eyes? The head?
It's the idea that there could be a giant praying mantis.
Oh, my gosh. No, wait a minute. Now, surely there's a creature out there that looks like a praying mantis.
Well, I've never heard of a cryptid per se that is supposed to look like a praying mantis, but I
Yeah.
have met multiple people who will tell me all about the times that they met or saw or were visited by praying mantid looking aliens, and that just is creepy to me.
Wow, she's creeped out. Stephanie Bingham, gets creeped out by things. Fascinating.
Absolutely.
That is, what else creeps you out? Like, dudes in their 50s that, like, you know, I don't know, hang out at dive bars?
Different kind
I mean,
of creeped out in those things, you know?
I mean,
different kind of creeped out.
Oh, my gosh. Okay, fine. Sorry, all the dudes in their 50s that listen to the show that hang out at dive bars. We apologize profusely.
We do.
But, I do wonder, Miss Stephanie Bingham, if, you know what? You know, now something just came to me again. See, now this is interesting. Do people, when people talk to you, do a million thoughts race through their head at once? Like, because you do bring that energy out of me, which is fascinating.
You're not the first to say that. People have odd energetic reactions to me. Strange things have happened. So, yeah, that's pretty par for the course.
Wow. Okay. Kind of cool. Staircases in the woods. I have to know what you know about this phenomenon because, now look, it's hard to know when it's just a Reddit thread, which this is where it came from. I mean, there was a big Reddit thread. This guy came out, said, look, one of these search and rescue people over the years, you hear stories and one of them is about the Bigfoot. But then one of the other stories was that a bunch of, and again, it could be fiction and it's great fiction if it is, but this idea that over the years, there are people that say, look, you're out in the woods, you see a staircase. Do not go near the staircase. It is bad.
Absolutely.
It is bad energy. And they say it's just a thing. You're just going to see it. It happens all the time when you're looking for these lost people. You're going to see the staircases. That's real?
Well, to an extent. I actually did a deep dive on the staircases in the woods and the doorways in the woods for a fiction project that I'm actually working on right now.
Oh, but, please tell me about that. Please. That's fascinating.
What I could find is a lot of Reddit threads, a lot of sort of personal anecdotes of seeing these stairs in the woods. But what I've also ran across when I started actually digging were ruins of houses, especially of sort of country estates in the Northeast, where all that is left of these fine, elegant homes were the fireplace and the cobbled staircase. And you can still find some of those just randomly dotted through national forests and things like that. And they are fascinating and creepy all at once. And the simple fact that you can find those does make you wonder if you are out in the middle of some remote forest, if you might not run into another. But there are definitely some staircases in the woods. Now, whether if you travel up them, you're going to travel out of this dimension into somewhere else, that's still up for grabs. But, you know.
Yeah, I mean, it is a very, the stories are so weird. I mean, this idea that you do not, as you're getting closer and as you descend or ascend the stairs, it starts feeling stranger and it's a bad, you just feel this bad feeling and people talk about them feeling terrible. I mean, again, fan fiction? Do we know anybody who's encountered these stairs? In your experience, it's purely anecdotal, right?
In my experience, it is purely anecdotal, yes.
Darn.
I know,
look.
Right? It would be such a good story.
Oh, my God. Okay, so give me something that is real, though. What do you think is, you know, one of these kind of similar related haunted things that keeps appearing that you're like, oh, no, this is definitely a real thing?
One of the things that I have found more evidence for along the same sort of structural realms is actually the doors in the woods. Or the door frames in the woods. And those seem to go back to houses or homesteads that were there, and all that's left is the door frame, be it stone or otherwise. And people going through those and having haunted experiences, paranormal experiences, not actually crossing dimensions or not actually crossing to wherever the stairs would take you, but allowing them to interact with ghosts or the paranormal in a unique way. That I have heard of first person.
Do people cross into other dimensions, do you think?
I am still not sure that most people know what that means, or there's a general consensus on exactly what that means.
Right.
You know, like, how do you tell exactly where one dimension ends and the next dimension starts outside of quantum physics, you know, that sort of thing. But I think a lot of people believe that that is true, and I can't tell them that they're wrong.
Yeah. Huh. That is a, well, you know, let me ask you this. I mean, I think when you get into the dimension thing, you also mm-hmm. get into something that certainly, again, in this, I'm very happy you're on to clarify at least what your interpretation of these phenomenon is, just because it crosses into so many different aspects of, I suppose, what I lovingly call the fringe. Portals and energies and areas. I mean, this goes into Montauk a little bit, but areas of vortexes of energy. And I mean, I had this guy, and actually I'd be curious if you were to ever speak with him, because I wonder how his theories line up with you. This guy named George Mitrovich, who is, he's in Australia. He's written hundreds and hundreds of, I mean, he's just one of these guys that claims that he's just got so many books about the history of paranormal phenomena that comes out. He like writes them like an encyclopedia and looks for every sighting. And he mapped where these sightings were happening throughout the world at certain times, and actually saw that there was a pattern. And his perspective is that where these areas, people, it's not necessarily the area, but the area shifts throughout different times. The energy shifts in locations based on the year that the sightings are happening. Therefore, his interpretation is that if a tribe of people, for instance, I guess you're not supposed to use the word tribe anymore, but if a group of people for instance, indigenous people believed in a Bigfoot, and you were around this energy vortex in a certain time period, you could actually manifest it because you were partly responsible for creating it. Same with UFOs. Yes. Mm-hmm. Yes.
Yeah.
And look, I don't know if that's entirely true. I've gone through the mathematics that this guy has. Is kind of one of these, off-kilter men, he'll tell you himself, that just thinks about a lot of these things and charts it out. But I found the phenomenon interesting that in these, you know, areas of supposed high electromagnet, whatever it is, this high energetic charge where people can, you know, adjust the ley lines and all this stuff, that there might be some kind of power that we really don't understand. You know, look, you can address any of that I just said, because I'm curious, but let's start here. What do you think of these portals and highly charged energetic vortices throughout the Earth?
So I deal with energy a lot. That is what I base most of my practice on. So in my experiences, there are places that are more energetically charged. They have more energy. They're more energetic activity in that area. So I absolutely believe that portals to an extent, but I go more for sort of the paranormal kind of idea of a portal, a mirror being a portal for spirits and that sort of thing. I've never been to a vortex, so I don't really know where I stand on those. I do not put it completely out of the realm of possibility, though.
Interesting. What do you think is going on in Montauk?
I think a lot of stuff is going on in Montauk. I think it's really a compounding of several different factors. I do think that there is obvious government involvement in Montauk, but I also think that there is just possibly a flap going on in Montauk, or that there was a flap going on in Montauk.
What's that?
Where you just have a flap. Flap. Like, you know, at Mothman at Point Pleasant, there was a flap going on during the sightings for that year that the sightings took place. Lots of weird paranormal activity happening in a confined area, and disparate paranormal activity. So you might have a sighting of a cryptid, you might have energetic anomalies, you might have paranormal activity, you might have alien sightings. all sorts of things like that happening very closely together, seemingly not linked, but appearing to have some sort of interactions with one another.
Yes, yes. I mean, that's the thing about Montauk, and I still am not sure what to make of it, including the fact that I even recently had someone that claimed they were part of it and was healed from it, and you know, I've had multiple people on that said that they believed they were subjected to experiments related to it. No matter what, there is an energy, it seems, about this area that people can feel. And there seems to be a consensus from people that live there, especially around the early 80s, all through the 90s, that something strange was going on. No question, something off was happening. I mean, to me, I can't ignore that.
I can't either. And I think that when you get down to just looking at the number of people that will just sit and say that something odd, no matter what it is, was happening at that time, that leads me to believe that not all of them can be lying, and there had to have been something happening there. Now, what exactly it was, I have no idea, but there was weirdness.
Yeah. What is the biggest mystery you want to solve in all of paranormal lore?
Ooh, biggest mystery. That's a good one. I have always been sort of fascinated with the ghost ships. And if we're going just for a weird, weird one of those, I want to know what happened with the Mary Celeste.
Oh, I know I've heard this story before, but I'd love to hear you tell it.
The Mary Celeste was a trading vessel, and it was completely mundane. The captain had known his crew for a very long time and was comfortable enough to bring his wife and very young child on the boat with them, which is not something a captain would have done unless they were very confident and very calm with the crew. They went out, and then the boat did not arrive on time, and another boat crossing its path came across the Mary Celeste, floating unmoored, unanchored, and seemingly mostly undamaged. The cargo was still there. It wasn't pirates, but every single person on the boat was gone. And things were still set out as if they were having breakfast that morning. It was as if everyone was there one moment and just gone the next. And there were no real answers as to whatever happened to the crew of the Mary Celeste.
Oh, boy, that is a fascinating, fascinating thing to explore. Really, you know, I thought you were going to say magic eight balls, but sounds
close
like
second,
this is
a close second.
Yes, yes. Okay. You know what? You've given me so much here. This is great. Now, look, I know that you are part of a project, and I'm actually hoping to have the founder of this come on, because I'm fascinated. Can you tell me a little bit about the Feminine Macabre?
So that is a journal for female and non-binary writers in the paranormal to just go off on whatever paranormal topics that they would like. I was in volume 2 and I'm in volume number 4 talking about various historical anomalies and paranormal historical stories, really. And it's really just a place to give women in the paranormal a voice because, you know, you go to a convention and you look at the lineup, it's going to be a lot of guys. There's going to be very few girls in there. Having done it for years myself, it's been more than one convention where I have been the only female presenter at the event, which is always a little disconcerting to me.
That's so strange. And you know what? I want to know about that because it seems as if, and, you know, I mean, look, we're, as a theater person, I mean, there are more actresses than than actors. There are, you know, and also there's that. And then also, in general, people I've met in my life, people that are more interested in these topics tend to be more females than men. You know, like, is it just a case of just, you know, classic patriarchy sneaking in every kind of territory? I mean, why when it seems that women are, you know, it seems, I don't know if it's true, but it certainly seems that women tend to be more sensitive to these energies historically. Someone can contest me on that. I guess all you men's rights activists out there that want to fight me on this or something. But it seems that way. Why isn't there more representation?
So historically speaking, at least from the research that I have done, it was always more acceptable for a female to be feeling the paranormal or to be experiencing it. It was always seen as more of a feminine attribute. But you always see activities of men in the same field. So it's a weird thing to look at historically speaking, especially with like spiritualist mediums. It gets very, very tight in there for a little while. But in my experience with it, there has been oftentimes it's your group of friends that end up speaking at conventions, especially smaller ones. So if it's a man putting on the convention, generally more men will be speaking at the convention because that is a little bit closer to that group. When it comes to larger conventions, I don't know why it still happens. There could be dozens of reasons. Maybe the topics just weren't as good that were pitched. It could be anything, but it does skew male. I know there have been times where I have been talking to, you know, producers, things like that, where I have been told, you know, you'd be great for this project, but you're a girl, so we would like a male to do this instead. And that's just trying to appeal to a different audience, thinking that women would not want to see a girl doing something, but they would like to see a man doing it instead.
What? There should be an all-female... I hope this Feminine Macabre produces an all-female paranormal convention. I think that would be very cool.
That would be super fun.
Yeah. Especially given that, you know, you're about to have this Taylor Swift-style squad of teenage girls following you everywhere.
Absolutely.
yes, I can see it already.
Everybody... We need a wind machine, too.
Yes. Wait a minute. Will you start singing again? Your musical theater career, will it come back?
Absolutely. As soon as that happens, yeah, we'll do the whole thing in song. It'll be great.
Oh my gosh. A singing paranormal investigator. I'd love to see it. Stephanie Bingham, people can find you. I mean, people can find you on Twitter.
Yes.
People can find you on Instagram.
Absolutely.
People can find you in the Feminine Macabre book series.
Absolutely.
Where else can people find you in this world?
If they want to get a hold of me, the best place really is going to be on Instagram. If you want to ask me anything, you want to talk about dead things, whatever it happens to be, just drop me a line. It's Amarna Marie, AmarnaMarie. That's my handle on pretty much everything. And if you want to see some of the things that I have been in, check out the CW's Mysteries Decoded. Look at Lizzie Borden, co-hosted that show, did a little seance in there for them, actually. So if we want to see sort of seances that I run.
Yes, amazing. And tell me this. I mean, last time, 2 years ago, at the end of the interview, you hinted at something. And I need to get back on this. Stephanie Bingham. Mm-hmm. What makes you a vampire?
The way I interact with energy.
Really? Now, wait a minute. I mean, we were kind of talking about you were hanging out with, you might be part of an organization. There might be, I mean, I don't
I'm
know if
not
I've ever.
Part of an organization. I know people.
Okay. So you, but you are a, I mean, is that the closest of all these things? I mean, you call yourself a medium and whatnot, though vampires do tend to have those abilities. Anyways.
If you're going to look for a specific term with that word in it, it would be psychic vampire, but vampire in that sort of wording is really just sort of a shock term to try and explain people who do not create enough physical energy for themselves and have to feed off of others in order to sustain themselves on any sort of level.
That's interesting. I know the show What We Do in the Shadows played with this notion of the energy vampire. Is that related to anything that is real? I mean, what are energy vampires? Can you point to a paranormal thing behind that?
So I would see that more as an emotional vampire, someone that is trying to feed off of your emotions. Someone you go out to dinner with, they tell you all their problems, and suddenly you are just in a lump on the floor, just feeling gross. A psychic vampire is someone who literally physically cannot create enough energy to sustain themselves and remain healthy. So they are going to be people who are in various forms, just taking energy from others. You find them in the theater quite often because there's a lot of energy there.
Oh, gosh. Yes. lot of vampires in acting school. Lots.
Absolutely. Absolutely. But, you know, if, especially if you're familiar with the theater, you know the sort of energy that you're talking about. When you're on stage, it's a palpable experience. You can feel the energy of the theater. You can feel the energy of the guests. So, just common there.
Yes. Stephanie Bingham, she is a vampire of sorts. she is a researcher, a knowledgeable paranormal expert. Let me ask you this. You know what? It's Halloween season. Yes. You know, people might be listening to this. Hopefully, this is going to come out right before the Halloween celebration. If people wanted to have a spooky but safe kind of experience where that delves into these paranormal themes, what would you recommend?
That's always fun because you want to stay within your own what makes you feel safe. But most locations, especially on Halloween, you can always find some place that is haunted. And I always like to do just, you know, some basic interactions with that. Be that taking your phone and trying to do EVPs on them. I find that very easy, and a lot of people understand that. And, you know, you go out, you ask questions, you turn the recorder on your phone, and then just see if you get any answers back that you couldn't hear with your ears. I've had people have a lot of success with that. And the good thing about a phone or an electronic device like that is you understand turning it off. And it's not really any different than a Ouija board, but a lot of people don't understand that you need to close a Ouija board. But everyone understands that you need to close your phone. You need to turn it off. So that helps break that. So you're not as likely to get something to follow you home.
Interesting. Interesting. What were those guys? Look, who put out the Ouija board? Parker Brothers or Milton Bradley? One of them.
I believe it's Parker Brothers. Let me look.
I mean,
I've got one right here.
Yeah, wait a sec. I mean, what were these guys trying to do by introducing this Ouija board into the popular psyche?
So they were trying to compete with the spirit boards of the age. Spirit boards were a very, very, very popular pastime. You could actually do a sort of dating game, because when spirit boards were popular at the turn of the century, it was considered, it's Hasbro, it was considered inappropriate for a young lady and a gentleman to be left alone in a room together. You know, you can't sit unchaperoned. But were you playing with a spirit board on the little spirit board table, it would be completely appropriate for, you know, your hands to be touching, or possibly scandalously your legs to be touching underneath the table as you were trying to contact the spirits of the dead.
Fascinating. Do you recommend doing the Ouija board as a first date activity?
Depends on who your date is, I guess. If you feel comfortable using a Ouija board and you feel comfortable closing it afterwards, I don't see a problem with it. But it is something, again, that you just need to remember. You're opening a doorway, make sure you close it behind you.
If someone said to you, not even on a date context, but someone just said, hey, Stephanie, look, first time we hang out, I want you to pull out a Ouija board. What would you say?
That sounds like something that's happened to me before.
Oh my god, did you do it?
Yeah, absolutely.
And did they regret their decision?
Yes, they did.
Wow, that is, you know what, we're gonna save that story for the next time you come on, because I want to know what happened then. That is fascinating. Stephanie Bingham, you are such a great guest. I love having you on this show. I appreciate you sharing your knowledge, sharing your personal experiences, and I'm fascinated. I hope you keep doing what you're doing out there. And yeah, please, anytime, come back. Love to have you on again.
Well, thank you so much for having me. It was great to talk to you again.
Absolutely. Stephanie Bingham. Dudes, what's your problem? You really gonna make this girl pull out a Ouija board on her first date? I mean, I you know what? That's like a second date move. If anything, so eager. Ugh. Anyways, Stephanie, loved having you on the show. You are fantastic. I want to thank Ronnie McGilvery for the theme music. I want to thank Zero Boy for the free theme music. Stay safe this weekend. You know, do everything you can to avoid drama, kids. You're better off. Much love. Ooh.